The full Will Chase experience. I love it.
The following is a production by Cutting to the Chase Podcast.
Part of it, surely. But he wants to win. Like, above anything else, dude wants to win.
Evan Altman from Cubs Insider. What's up? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just, I'm actually sitting here, you know, it's Friday. The Cubs played a couple games earlier. I'm looking at TCU in Kansas. So watching a little college baseball tonight, using the most of my ESPN Plus subscription to just scroll through college baseball. So it's a good night.
Nice. Yeah. I had some college basketball on just a few minutes ago, just kind of killing time. But have you had ESPN Plus for a while now?
Yeah, it's and I'm trying to remember why, you know, if I got it, I've had it for a long time. And I know initially it was like the, you know, the additional content from whether it's Jeff Passan or some of the other guys. And then I'm kind of a UFC fan, maybe a little bit lapsed, although I know Sean O'Malley's fighting tomorrow night. So I'm kind of they've been hyping that. I don't know. I might do that. But that was kind of cool. And honestly, up until this year, I didn't realize like how rich the programming was on the college baseball side.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Like there's 20 games going on, you know, at any one evening, especially over the weekends, you know, and it's been great. Although the thing with it is, right, like you get used to it. We complain about it. Marquee's center field camera isn't great, and I'm not really happy about that during spring training. But it's a head and shoulders above most of the college broadcasts, where it's like just a stationary cam, you know, like two of them, maybe one in center, maybe one like weirdly offset. That's you know, some of them are like no audio at all. It's just, hey, there's a video feed. So so I can't complain, but I'm super happy that I have it now, because it's just great. And I don't care really about what these teams do. That's the best thing in the world. I love watching college baseball. Yeah. And I don't have a dog in the fight, so it's just tremendous.
You know, the fact that college baseball really isn't, I guess, covered quite to the extent of like college basketball or mainly college football makes it that much more underrated. I should check out college baseball a lot more often than I do. I probably check into it a little bit more during like the tournament and everything. But I know it starts, you know, early in the year, basically, and it's going on right now. And I should check out more games myself.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And again, I think a lot of it. And honestly, part of the reason that I got into it a little bit more this time, so my son and I are going down to Arlington for opening day, opening weekend. So we're going, nice. Cubs are, you know, the Cubs are opening at the Rangers, which is kind of cool in and of itself, but obviously made just infinitely more so by the fact that the Rangers are going to be, you know, raising a banner and giving out rings and doing that whole thing, which is super, super cool. And last time I saw the Cubs open up the season at an AL West opponent was in 2016. Things worked out well, so we'll see. But and for the life of me, I don't understand this. I get why you have a day off in between games if it's in Chicago or cold weather city. We're going to Dallas in a domed stadium, a covered stadium, and they still have Friday off. They're opening on Thursday. They don't play again until Saturday. Like, that is beyond me. I don't – but we're going to take advantage – well, actually, no. Friday is not when we're going. We're going to TCU. TCU's playing Houston. We're going on Saturday. We're going to spend Friday kind of exploring Dallas, but going to the Warstick headquarters. Warstick, they make bats and baseball stuff, and that's kind of fun. But anyway, so I was stoked about, like, oh, we're going to go to a college baseball game. That's cool. And I was like, yeah, TCU is actually really, really good. I'll start watching some of their games. And it's kind of been them and Coastal Carolina, which is also a really good program. Cubs have gotten a lot of guys out of there. It's in Myrtle Beach or nearby. I think it's actually Conway. But in any case, it's just been kind of fun to watch that, because then you can sort of pick up these teams. And I'm an IU fan. Indiana University, they've got a pretty solid squad this year. Indiana State's actually pretty good. Ball State's got a couple of decent guys. So it's really neat because you can follow this stuff. And like you said, because it's not hyped up, it's you know, it's not college football, it's not basketball. The season doesn't swing on one game. And there's just not that same level of hype that goes into it. And so you can just sort of watch and enjoy it. And like, most of these guys aren't going to go on and play at the next level, but there's so many great characters, and it's just, there's a lot of, it's very intense and entertaining. And I think a lot of people, if they took the time to really kind of just sit down and pay a little attention to college baseball, would really, you know, if you're a baseball fan in general, you'd really, really enjoy it, because it's a different brand from what you see at, you know, at the big league level or whatever. But I just find it to be a lot of fun, right? And I think we don't, and maybe I'll get into this in a little bit, we don't have as much fun with baseball as I think we should. Yeah. And that's where I find college and the minors, I can take so much more just raw enjoyment out of. And then it gets to like breaking down stuff and like, oh, why'd he bunt there? You know, and then you get all mad about, get bent out of shape about one call in one game. So I don't care. Like, this is, I don't know who these guys are. Oh, this guy's going to bunt. Cool. I don't care. Good.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Sometimes having no dog in the fight's the best way to go about it, because then you're just watching it for fun. You're not getting pissed off at a team that you know, have, any sort of stock into, or you're just watching a game just to watch a game. That's what's great about having all these games on ESPN and ESPN Plus. It's just so many different random games you can just check in. It's like March Madness coming up here in a few weeks. I mean, I'm not, you know, I haven't watched half the country, but it's gonna be fun just to watch all these random teams and games, and like you said, all the characters in general. And I think it was Virginia at college baseball. I think it was Virginia had a character that kind of went viral on Twitter a couple of years ago, and I remember sometime last year, it was like coming up again on Twitter, and people were like, this actually was from like 2 years prior. For some reason, it's going viral again, but the guy was a character.
Yeah, it's
so.
Like Steven, I don't know if it's Stock or Shock or Scope.
It might have been.
You know, I'm butchering his name, and I apologize, but I don't know if he does commentary now, but it was about like Skittles or Starburst or it was Dippin' Dots. I think it was Dippin' Dots. He was talking about I just want a sponsorship
with
Dippin' Dots, right? And he's a big old dude. His Twitter handle is like Big Donkey, you know, and like, that's what he was. He's got like a big old mullet, and he was like the Andrew Chafin of college baseball, kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's just a fun dude who got it, who was like, I'm not going to be a major league all-star. I'm not making it that but I am enjoying the hell out of this college baseball experience. And he still does a lot of stuff. I see him a lot of times on Twitter, and he just seems like a fun guy. And that's I guess what I love about it is these are dudes who, again, a vast majority of them are not going on to play. It's, you know, it's the old NCAA commercial, right? There's however many thousand college athletes, and 95% of us are going pro in something other than sports. Right. And but you get to look into that and see that, because I do think while that is still true of major college football and basketball, it's dominated by the top draft picks, by the top guys on each of these schools. And we're going to see, you know, you're watching Alabama or Michigan or Washington. And so the guys that you're hearing about are primarily these top picks, the dudes who are going to go on and be stars, because understandably they want to promote that. But in baseball, there's not like that. I think that's the thing for me. When I'm watching these games, it's just like two local dudes broadcasting it on ESPN Plus. Like, there's no ulterior motive. Yeah. They're not trying to hype anybody beyond, like, there's 25 people watching this game or whatever, right? And the stands are half full.
Yeah.
But they're doing it. And so that's what I was like, these guys are doing it. They know the game. They understand these players. They're doing it because they love it. And I don't know. It's just it reminds me a lot, because, man, there are times, right, with this gig and kind of blogging about this stuff and doing podcasts and whatever, and we're talking about the Cubs, and it can get tedious. There's games every day. There's who's going to make the roster. Oh, who's hurt with this? Oh, Chris Morel made another error. Should he play third base ever again in his life? Oh, it's our whole consciousness depends on what happens with Chris Morel tomorrow. And it's again, I mentioned this, but it can suck the fun out of it. And it does. It becomes very tedious and it's hard. And that's why I'm very excited about the fact I'm going to be in spring training in a couple weeks for the last weekend of spring training. And the very next week, I'm going to be in Arlington for the opening of the season. And to me, then I'm like, okay, there's no better way to sort of start your season than to get a few games in the spring, get down to the backfield, see some games back there, watch some of the prospects, you know, before all that breaks. and then get over and watch those first two games of the season when everything's fresh, everything's new, one way or the other, most of the people in that ballpark are going to be super, super happy about being there because of what's going on. And so I'm like, my vibes will be pretty immaculate for like at least a week, you know, 8 to 10 days, right? And then and then we'll see what happens after that. But I'm really I get to bring my son with me, right? Ideally by that point, he'll be a high school baseball player. We'll find out in the next couple of days. And so it's just kind of a cool thing. So I'm in a really, really good space right now when it comes to baseball, which I don't know if we talk in a month or two, that may be different. Mm-hmm. But for now it's good.
Yep. Very relatable, because, you know, for me right now, I've been very immersed in hockey with the writing and stuff on that side, and it's definitely a grind, whatever the sport, whatever you're doing, it's always a grind, and it's fun, you like doing it, but it's work, it's effort sometimes to watch a game or a team when they're not playing very well, or you have to figure out, what am I writing about today that I didn't already do last week? So totally relatable there. But, you know, it is fun when you're at the beginning of the season. There's hype, there's potential, there's all the buzzwords there. You know, going back real fast to what you said about why there's that day off in between games, you're right. I mean, you're talking about a team. I guess they just want every team to feel included in that regard. I guess they just want, you know, if this team in Chicago gets the day off in between, might as well let every team have that. But you're right, Dome, warm city, there's no point. There's not going to be a rain out or a snow out or whatever.
Yeah, likely. I mean, unless they're assuming that like everybody's just going to party so much, you know, celebrating the banner or the rings or whatever. Yeah. I know the Cubs raised the banner in 2017. Mm-hmm. They raised the banner on the first game, and then the second game they did the rings. And right. And I was not there for the, but we were actually the home I live in now, we were moving into it on the night of opening day, which, you know, if, as everybody probably recalls, if you were, you know, if you're a Cubs fan, which probably a lot of you who are listening, it was cold and rainy and nasty, and the game got delayed for hours. We were like, we are playing this game.
And I remember that.
And so, you know, I'm like painting my basement, doing all this stuff and staying up super late. And then, you know, a couple days later, then I was up there for game two, and it was really, and also just very cold, like wind blowing in, just not a fun game to be at from an environment perspective. But the atmosphere is great. You know, they gave out the rings, and I got like the giveaway when you got in the gate was a replica World Series championship banner, which was super cool. Even it's got a big MasterCard logo on it, which is a little bit corny, but you know,
yeah,
you do what you can. Yeah. And it was just, and it was just a really fun moment, like all the way around, to be able to kind of spend. So again, I, you know, maybe that's part of it. I don't know, but super, super cool. And, you know, so if anybody's watching the game, opening night, Cubs opening night, look at the field level suites they got there at Globe Life Field, and you might see somebody you recognize. I'll just say that. So we'll see.
I was in Dallas back in January for work, so it's cool that you'll be down there, and then, or in Arlington, really. But real fast, you said you were at the Angels opening against the Cubs in 16, right? Mm-hmm. So what were you doing out in L.A.?
Yeah, so I had some, my full-time job had some accounts that I work with in the area, and managed to time that up. And
gotcha.
So there were a couple of them actually in Orange County. And so we stayed out there, and it was myself and some coworkers, and went out to both of the first two games there as well, and missed. I think that was Villanova. Was it Villanova? Mm-hmm. Did they beat North Carolina? Was that, it was like North last Carolina, second shot, yeah. Right? And so missed it because I was there. Got some texts about it or whatever. But it was, again, super cool because everybody knew. And this is kind of wild. I won't go off on too much of a tangent, but it was super funny because somebody, I think it was on Facebook, which makes sense, was like, everybody was surprised when they, you know, the ownership and everybody was surprised when they won in 2016. I was like, dude, nobody was surprised. Like, they went into that season as the odds on favorite. Like, everyone had them favored wire to wire. And to
World Series or bust. Yeah.
And to come out of the gate and do what they did. But so a lot of us knew that, but it was really cool because we were out there and there's a microbrewery that's just the little, you know, quarter mile maybe north of the ballpark there. For the life of me now, I can't remember, but it's really, really cool. Like, the garage doors roll up, whatever. And so a bunch of us on Twitter at the time had decided, hey, let's all get together there. And so this whole place is just filled with Cubs fans, just packed with people. So we're out there in Anaheim, and I was there with a coworker who was originally from Texas. And so she had no idea. Like, she was there with me and went to the game, but, you know, was there because I had bought the tickets and she was there to be there. And so it was a huge trip for her because it was super. And I tried to explain. I was like, these people know I'm going to be here. It's not like I'm just walking around in public in you know, Southern California. And people are like, oh. But I knew half the people in the bar, right? Because we had organized this, like, Luis Medina from Bleacher Nation and everything. Danny Rocket, you know, from San Ranto was there. Joel Cummins, who plays keyboards in Umphrey's McGee. He was out there. So we're hanging out. You know, this is like all these people that I'm coming to, and there are a bunch more who I can't really think of, and I should stop just name dropping because then I'll feel bad about the people. But it was the neatest thing because it was just this huge contingent of Cubs fans who were out there, and I saw many more as we went through there. So it was like half, I mean, honestly, because nobody, the Angels don't draw real well among their own fans. Even when the Cubs were bad, I was out there in like 2012, and the Cubs were terrible, and it was still half Cubs fans in Anaheim. But yeah, so that was just such a neat deal to have been a part of that and be like, I was there at the beginning. I didn't get to go to game 7. I did get to 2 World Series games, but I was there to start there in the end and saw a bunch of games in the middle, and just a cool experience to kind of be like, yeah, like literally wire to wire with them.
Yeah, my games that I saw were in Atlanta when I was down in Georgia that year. I saw the couple of the games in Atlanta, which Lester and Arrieta started. And they won those games. I think they lost the first. They lost the first game of that series. I wasn't at that game. I was at the 2 wins though, so that was cool. That was in, I think, June of that year. But anyway, we'll go ahead and get into it. Didn't mean to take up too much. I didn't want to take up too much of your time, but we'll go ahead and get into it. So, all right, Evan. So, if I were to ask you, like, what number you would put on the Cubs in terms of the quote unquote Evan Altman excitement level? 1 being bad, 10 being great. What is your number that you would put on the 2024 Cubs?
I'm probably at, like, if we're talking pre-Bellinger, I'm probably at like a 5. I mean, just very meh. And you know, I don't want to undersell anything, but I'm maybe at like a 7.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, because he was still there. If this was the addition of. If Cody Bellinger played somewhere else last year and did what he did, and then the Cubs signed him, I'm probably like an 8 or a 9. But you're kind of like, you're just replacing, hopefully, what you had. But then I look at, you know, Shota Imanaga. I'm really, I really like what I'm seeing with that. I'm interested. I don't know if I'm excited. I'm interested to see how things evolve at the corner infield spots. And I, you know, I mentioned Morel. So, I like the way they've gone about things. I do think, and then Craig Counsell, you know, for as much as it, you know, you get into this thing when they're a division rival and you kind of rag on people for that. I really, really like the philosophies that he has shared, the way he's gone about things. And I didn't dislike David Ross and, you know, I would defend him at, on certain areas and I was very critical in others, but everything Counsell says and the way he explains his thought process, it's exciting and interesting to me to find how he will. And I'm not talking about like, who's he going to move in this bullpen situation or what's this, but I talk about the Morel situation and how he's like, yeah, I want him to make mistakes. He's supposed to. That's how it works. And we're going to let that go. And I do feel like with Ross, there was kind of a tendency a couple times for some knee-jerk stuff of like, nope, you're done. You screwed up. You're out. You know, and then you're in the doghouse and whatever. So how that plays out, I'm excited for kind of what's coming and the prospects. So, yeah, we'll peg it at a 7.
That's fair. I think it's, 7, maybe 7, 8. I don't know. For me, I think 7's a pretty good number. What's the win number that you put on this team?
So I nailed it last year. And I do kind of feel like as much as I don't think they've done enough to increase it, like 90 feels like still feels like a super optimistic number.
Yeah.
85 is the number that I've said for a long time. I feel like they were comfortable with 85, right? To the to the point that like people thought this was the Cubs saying that they're good with 85 wins, which obviously no team would come out and say. But like 88, I think I'm cool pushing to that because and that was before Bellinger was 85. So you figure, okay, well, if he's worth maybe three wins and some things happen, I think 88 is good. That's a six game improvement. And the only reason it's probably not a higher, if they still had the standard schedule of 19 games within the division versus the balance calendar, I think that, because I honestly don't think the Cardinals are going to be any good. I really don't.
I mean, same.
Like, they're bad, right? They were, you know, and especially when you have a bunch of dudes who are like my age.
AARP.
Yeah, like, seriously, the whole pitching staff, like every pitcher that they got in there is, you know.
Sonny Gray's out.
Yeah, like they're, I mean, how are those guys going to be healthy? And so, I am a little, the Reds kind of scare me a little bit, but like the Brewers are selling everybody off, right? The Pirates, I don't think are ready yet. So 90 would feel better if you're playing 19 games against all of them. You cut that down a little bit. You balance it out. You got to have more games against the West, the East, the AL. 88, I think, again, 86 to 88, but I'll go 88. I'm feeling optimistic. Like I said, my vibes are feeling good, so we'll give them a couple extra games there.
That's fair. I know last year I was in that, like, at best 82 to 85 range. Could have even had 85 if they didn't blow some of those games down the stretch, but yeah, I feel right now I'm feeling in that 85-ish range, which might be good enough. You just laid it out. The NL Central kind of sucks, and the Cubs can, I think, we'll get into this, but I feel like the Craig Counsell factor, maybe he gets them like the extra five, the plus five wins or whatever. I feel like they can be 85-ish wins. I think you had an article or somewhere, I think I saw earlier on Cubs Insider a while ago that, maybe it's 85 in that division. Is it good enough to win? And like you said, Cardinals, I'm not high on the Cardinals. The Brewers are selling. The Pirates stink. The Reds are the other team that I'm like, they're kind of scary. So we'll see. But I think we're aligned on that. So sitting here as we record this on March 8th, how surprised are you based on how the offseason has played out for the Cubs? Going back to like November 6th, obviously, when they hired Craig Counsell, I think everybody was so elated. They thought if they're going to spend this much money for Craig Counsell, they're going to open up the wallet, essentially. But how surprised are you based on what we know now and where we are today versus where you might have been, you know, a couple months ago?
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, I was among those. And it's funny because like a lot of multiple people, depending on where you fell on what you thought the Cubs would do, there's a lot of people saying, I told you so, right? They're like, I told you they wouldn't spend the money to get Ohtani. And it's like, well, nobody thought he was going to get $700 million, dude. Like, no, okay, yes, you were right. They didn't have the money. Like, nobody did. He wasn't going anywhere other than L.A. And on the other hand, you could be like, well, you know, again, I told you to be cheap. They only gave $80 million to Bellinger. Like, dude.
That's a win.
MLB trade rumors thought he was getting $264 million over 12 years, which was the dumbest prediction. I mean, I apologize. I don't know you guys at MLBTR, but that was completely asinine. Like 12 years, $264 million, come on, that was never gonna happen. But I thought they were gonna be more aggressive in it, and instead they pulled like the Kristen Bell in the commercial with her and Dax Shepard, where they're like, it's for Carfax or something like that, which is like, hold, and he's like, we can sell the van. Hold, or you know, we could be Braveheart, whatever you want to do. And Jed's just like, hold. And he ended up getting Shota Imanaga for like half of his prediction. There were, I mean, even if you were more realistic about Bellinger, it felt like 150 was like the floor maybe. And they got him for 80, right? Like, so again, half, like in the end, I think where I come down is I'm not surprised by the guys they signed, because those were people that Bellinger always felt like the best fit for the Cubs both ways. Imanaga, because once Yamamoto's deal, like once his price started going up, you knew they were out on that, you know? And so then I'm not surprised by the guys they signed. What I'm surprised by was the fact that as opposed to the Dodgers, who then just blew everyone away with the, and in addition to those two, right? Like, they traded for Tyler Glass now and then extended him for way more than anybody would have expected, especially given his track record. So there's that. And then there's what the Cubs did. And it's like, okay, I mean, and I think what they did in a way, and everybody's like, oh, they're cheap. But there's a difference between being cheap and just buying dudes and hoping that, you know, Garrett Cooper and Dom Smith will both make the roster, and then saying, hey, we're sticking to our value model. This is what we feel like you're worth. And when the market tells you as much, you can come on back and then we'll make this work. So surprised that it happened the way it did. Not surprised by the players themselves. So long answer to, I could have said that in like 10 words.
Well, going back to November 6th, were you thinking, oh, they just shelled out, you know, X dollars for Craig Counsell. I think this team is going to be pretty aggressive.
Yeah, because it was the, you know, there were two schools of thought on that. One is, oh, they hired Counsell. Now they're just going to behave like the Brewers, right? And he's going to have to win with a mediocre roster, which is really dumb. Again, because what did the Brewers ever win? How many World Series titles do they have? Right, like they barely even had any playoff wins. Because, and we can look at the Rays, like they've done, you know, they had the season under Joe Maddon, they made it to the World Series. But by and large, the difficult part with when you win like that, very costly during the regular season in terms of just because you've got to get the most out of those rosters. And then you run into having zero margin for error once you get to the postseason. And these other teams with more money can generally, right? Not always, right? Well, the Diamondbacks. Okay, yeah. Well, the Rangers, right?
Yeah.
And so you can overcome a lot of that. And so my thought was, they didn't sign Counsell to run a bottom-tier payroll team. They got him and said, hey, you're doing this with a low-tier payroll team. What happens when we give you a $250 million roster? And you know, that was my belief. And so but the way they've done it, and this is what's really weird, is because a lot of times people will not look into that, right? They're not looking at, or it's either, well, they're not the Dodgers, you know, they're not the, well, okay, great. Like, they're not the Mets, fine. But I think people are maybe surprised when they say the Cubs are cheap. I mean, they have spent some money the last couple seasons. They really have, but they've done it in a way that is financially smart, like the way the Brewers have done. So it's like you're doing how the Brewers or how the Rays might, but at a higher level. So they're searching for value. So there's a difference between being cheap and getting value. And I think if they're able to do that and go to some of those levels, get the right moves as far as the guys that they develop, that's where Counsell makes a difference, because it's a matter of having more overall talent and depth than what the Brewers had. The Brewers were thin, right? Top line talent. Beyond that, though, forget it. A couple of those guys are gone. It's over. Like, Yelich doesn't have, you know, they were great when Yelich was having MVP seasons out of nowhere, right? When he's like Barry Bonds for 2 months at a time. But that's very hard to replicate. So anyway, yeah, I love that move because of what it means for what now they're able to do. Whether you want to spend $300 million, and I get it, and I think they should just, might as well. Like, who cares about the taxes? Go blow it out. You're making a ton of money. But I like what Counsell brings, and I think what that means for them long-term as far as sustainability.
You're tapped in. Did you have any inkling that they were after Counsell or that Ross might be out, or were you just surprised as pretty much everybody else?
I was as surprised as everyone. I mean, I know that there were, right, there was a lot of, kind of joking or like, yeah, they should go get Counsell. And I mean, that was out there, right, when everybody knew he was going to be free agent, and it was evident that he was not going to agree to an extension or anything with the Brewers. And it was like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. Like, you should go do this. But then nobody thought that would happen. And I remember kind of joking about it when, you know, because it was like, oh, he's going to the Reds, or I don't know, was it the Yankees, was the Red Sox? They were, like, everybody was speculating all this stuff. Like, he's going to one of these.
Yeah.
And then it was like, nope, it's not that. And everybody's like, what? Maybe it'll just be the Cubs. And then it was like, oh my God. Like, yeah. And so it was more one of those things like, yeah, that'd be cool, but that's never going to happen. Like, they're not going to do that. And to do it but that was what was wild. It's even like nobody knew in this day and age, yeah. Right? For not even like I saw him at Starbucks, you know what I mean? Or whatever, he's on his way. Like Heyman and Morosi, Jeff Passan didn't know. Nobody had this before. Like, and it was done a day before. He had signed on Sunday and it broke on Monday. Like, that just doesn't happen today in the way the news cycle works. So I think that was what was so interesting. And, you know, we heard about that, though. Imanaga had been in Chicago the entire offseason, you know, living in Chicago, literally, right? And I mean, circumstances. It's not like he was there and had signed with the Cubs or whatever, but it's just, and then it came out and then bam, they got it done. And even the Bellinger thing kind of happened super late at night, you know, on the same day as Dexter Fowler. When he had come back in 2016, that was kind of crazy. And so Jed Hoyer is that, say what you will about other things. We can parse that however we want. He is as good as anyone.
Stealth.
When it comes to being stealthy, to moving in silence. And I think that's part of it, is like he doesn't telegraph his moves at all. And he's a little bit different from Theo Epstein in that way. And I'm going to say, like, Epstein was not transparent, but he, you know, we did kind of know about some of this stuff. I think that if I go back to, like, John Lester, different situation, but that felt like, I felt like we knew the Cubs were going to be heavily involved with Lester. We knew they were heavily involved with Jason Hayward. Like, that was evident from the start. And so it was really just a matter of, who's this player going to choose? Like, everybody knew who it was between, what was happening, and it was like an election and waiting on the results or something, right? Whereas this is like, there's stuff that, I mean, you might know a little bit, but then all of a sudden the news comes out of nowhere. It's like, no, there's no offers, there's no talks, there's no, oh, hey, Cody Bellinger signed with the Cubs. Okay. You know, 2 a.m. or whatever. You know, so it's, that part's fun. We talk about excitement, like, that part is kind of cool. I liked, and I think Hoyer kind of, I think he gets off a little bit on that. Like, I think like he knows, I think he monitors things enough. Just not that he's doing it to get the internet riled up, but I think he takes a little bit of pride in the fact that, like, everybody's speculating on what's happening, and he's like, no, this is what's happening. And then here it goes.
You know, with counsel, I thought, you know, the Mets made sense because it's David Stearns going there. And then there's the Cleveland rumors. But then when they said he's going to a team that already has a manager, I was like, I don't remember now what I thought. I don't think I thought Cubs, but I was like, and then I saw the Cubs, and then, like, you know, the internet blew up there. But, and then with, like you said, with Cody Bellinger, everybody was like, Jed, sign him at 200 and, you know, get whatever the number, just get him. And I was leery about him. I'm sure you probably had your, you know, concerns just based on what that money could be and the optics and the underlying metrics. But then you get him at the money that you get him, and it's like, okay, there's the opt-outs, and it was like, okay, Jed knew what he was doing to wait this game out.
Yeah, and that was what was kind of funny about the Bellinger thing, and I will give MLB Trade Rumors their props, because they did have a good piece about how, well, hey, maybe he'd be open to something small. And I think Arizona Phil with the Cub Reporter had something like that too, that maybe he'd do a one-year deal along those lines. So none of it was exactly lined up with what he did, but I think that's the difference, is that, you know, we're looking at it and saying, Jed, why aren't you know, flex your financial muscle, just throw the dude $200 million and let's go. And Hoyer's like, no, I'm not going to bid against myself. Nobody else is out there giving this guy this money. There's a reason for it. I understand it. And so to get, you know, because then you could sit there and say, but you could have had him earlier. And he's like, nah, I mean, look, you wanted us to give him $200 million. It's 80 at the most, might only be 30, you know, depending on, I think again, you love it. If Bellinger plays well enough that he knows he can go out and get more than $50 million over the next 2 years and beyond, then he's had a hell of a season, another tremendous performance, right? The Cubs have benefited from that. They will have Owen Casey, Pete Crow Armstrong, Kevin Alcantara, all these guys, another years of experience, along with two guys in the outfield who are already locked up. Like, there's no situation in this. And if Bellinger isn't as good as he was last year, you're still only on the hook for two more years. It's not crushing your bottom line. I cannot foresee a situation in which this is bad for either side, right? Either Bellinger makes his $80 million. He's still young. He's still only 31 when the thing's over, his age 32 season. Like, he still could play for several more years and earn a very nice living one way or the other. So I just, it's great. And kudos to Jed Hoyer for understanding the market and not kowtowing to what everybody wanted and saying, oh yeah, I got to jump out, because there's a difference, right? Just because you can spend money does not mean you should spend that money, right? And listen, I want to be very clear. I am fully in the camp of the Cubs should carry a huge payroll, right? Top 10 at the very least, top 5 preferably. They should be spending money. But there's no reason, if you can get a dude for 80, it's stupid to pay 200. Why would you do that? It's crazy.
It's like when you I buy something online and then the next day I'm like, "Oh, I could have gotten free shipping."
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm like, and that's what I sit there and I wait on at times, you know, like I'll do this. I'll go, like, I mentioned my son playing and you know, I'll look at it and, like, he's growing, whatever. He wears a size 12 right now. And I'm like, well, I'll search eBay all the time for spikes, you know, and find out, like, hey, are there some, and I'll look in certain colorways or whatever. And he likes the Mike Trout Nikes. And I found that there were Trout 4s. So they're on like 9s now. So they're a few years old, whatever. But I found a pair for like $30. New, yeah. No box, whatever. So, like, I'm going to go, why buy a brand new pair for $150 when I can get this pair for $30? And guess what? I don't care if they only last for 3 months in the middle of summer, you know, and that's when he wears them for that season. That's great. So again, it's the same thing. Like, I could go ahead and buy some brand new ones right now and make sure, but, or I could sit here and kind of scope eBay and see where the deals come. So I feel like Jed and I are on that. We're on a level. At the end of the day, man, shoes are a little bit different from a player. Like, this shoe, like, shoes aren't going to make you better, right? But again, and I think, like, Bellinger, I noted this earlier, he's such a tremendous fit for this team. And I think for what his, I don't want to say he wouldn't have done what he did last year on another team, but this is a big thing. A lot of people were writing about this, myself included, or whatever, when he came in. It was a great situation for him last year. He came into a great situation, and it worked well for him, and there were a lot of things that he did. So that's what I like about it, is I think Hoyer knew. Like, he knew Bellinger wanted to be there as well, right? Like, and so that's one of the things. I think among his other characteristics where he's strong, I do think Hoyer is a good judge of character, personality, that sort of thing. I think he gets, he's a little old school in that regard, and he's into team chemistry and how guys fit together. So I think that's a big part of the reason why he and Council kind of fit well at this point as well.
Yeah, diving into Council specifically, or diving down more into that. So did you also kind of have a feeling, kind of, you know, going back to like the payroll and the roster and all that stuff, with Council specifically, did you kind of have a feeling that the Cubs weren't necessarily looking to break the bank in free agency because, you know, they hired Council, but also because they probably viewed him as kind of like more or less that difference in the manager chair of like, he can probably get us like an extra 5 wins or, you know, whatever, based on moves that he might make, or, you know, like maybe you look down the stretch of last year with David Ross and some of the gaffes that were happening and maybe games where things that happen might have cost them games. But then you look at the Council effect and it's like, okay, we don't have to necessarily break the bank. We can kind of maximize our potential based on maybe what Council can provide for us.
No, I mean, I did think they were going to spend more when they got him, simply because, you know, and I said this earlier a little bit, but I I didn't think that they wanted to just say, hey, we're going all young, you know, we're going cheap and young like Milwaukee, and we're going to have him win with that same thing. I really felt like they were going to go big, you know, and part of that, I think, is, you know, if you're Craig Council, like, he could have stayed in Milwaukee. They would have paid him well. I guarantee that. And he never would have been fired from the Brewers, right? He would have been fine. Hometown guy. He lives around there and played for him, whatever. Like, it's one of those gigs where nobody's putting that much, you know, I guess apologies. I don't really care if I piss off any Brewers fans, but like, they don't really care that much. It's not as if it's Chicago or New York or LA where there's this high pressure to go ahead and succeed year after year. He'd have been fine there. My thought was like, okay, but to get him to leave Milwaukee, to go to a division rival, right? Because that's a big deal. It's not just like he left and went to San Diego or something, right? To do that, obviously the money was involved, but my thought was he was given some assurances that we're going to spend, we're going to give you a better team than what you've ever had before, talent-wise, so that you can win. Because he's not doing that for ego. He's not doing that simply to get paid. That's a part of it, surely. But he wants to win. Like, above anything else, dude wants to win. And so you can't just say, hey, come on up here, we'll do the same thing. We're going to actually try to be just like Milwaukee, and we want you to just do it for a different team. Like, no, we're gonna spend enough. Because and he kind of noted that, too, and that was part of it. It's like the Brewers were simply never going to give him a roster that he knew he could win with, right? Like, they were always going to give him a roster that he had to max out in order for them to win. And I think that's the whole deal. He's like, I want to be able to do this with an organization that is built in such a way that I can do my thing and we have a chance, even if I'm not like perfect in every move, that we could still do some things. And so that was kind of my thought going into it, and we'll see. And I think they're kind of, they split the difference, right? They didn't spend hundreds of millions of dollars, and they didn't go kind of the Brewers way and trade off dudes and just go young. So they're somewhere in the middle. And I think they can add to that as they go forward, because he's there for 5 years at the minimum. Right. So he's got time, so they can build it with him.
Yeah. I kind of thought initially that they were going to, you know, potentially spend a lot of money. But yeah, I do feel like maybe it's more kind of like Jed is playing out this kind of this waiting game, kind of like with Bellinger, in terms of striking when it makes the most sense, maybe. And maybe, you know, they're banking on, they like the roster now. They like the guys that are in the minors that could be coming up soon. Maybe it's next season where they, you know, look at maybe it's not Juan Soto, but something of that ilk where it's like, that's where we go all in potentially or whatever. I know that they had, what was it, $500 million for Otani. Like you said, he was always going to go to LA, but, you know, they're not typically going to be putting $500 million out for just anyone. So obviously they're probably, they're in it if it feels like it makes sense to them, is what I'm trying to get at. But yeah, I mean, you said 5 years, they'll probably have a year like when in 16, going into 16, when they got Lester and of course Hayward and guys like that, they'll probably have a season like that here coming up where they finally spend the money, or at least, you know, look to spend the money like people have been wanting them to do for the last several off seasons now.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, it's they look at it as what makes sense, and I do think, right, if let's just be realistic, the Dodgers and the Braves have some monster teams. I mean, now the Braves aren't going away; they got like 25 players locked up for the next 8 years or something like that. I mean, I'm being hyperbolic, but they have a ton of dudes under control for the next several years. Right, the Dodgers, they're, you know, you've got Otani, you've got Freeman, you've got Betts, you've got all these great players, but those dudes are not young anymore, and they're not getting any younger over time, so their window is much shorter, and I think there's something you've got to look at and say, okay, yeah, I mean, are we going to compete with them toe-to-toe every time? Like, the key is, though, can you go beat them in a 5-game series? Can you beat them in a 7-game series? Right? Can you get enough together to get into it? This is what we saw, because guess who wasn't in the World Series this year? The Braves weren't in it. The Dodgers weren't in it, right? The Dodgers don't go unless it's a short season of 50 games, so we don't need to worry about them for that. But the Braves won a legitimate World Series, actually. So
yep.
But the Braves, when they won that World Series, you remember that was they traded for Jock Peterson, but Peterson showed up in Atlanta and they were like, dude, you might get flipped next week. Like they were only two games ahead of the Cubs at the time, right? Like they were and the a game ahead. I mean, the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Braves were right in the same spot. The Braves got hot, went on a run, and now everybody looks at them like this juggernaut. And so Jed's looking at that. He's looking at what happened with the Nationals when they won, when they were terrible to open the season, then got hot. Look at the Diamondbacks and what they did. I'm not talking about how much people are spending or anything like that. It's just more about where are you from that position of you get into the Rangers got in as a wild card. They didn't win their division.
Right.
And so it's just you have to get there and then have the horses. Now, the Cubs probably aren't there in that regard, especially if we look at the pitching staff. It's difficult to look at, man, who are your top three? Are you matching up with any like these legitimate contenders? Are you matching up? The Braves just alone, just look at Spencer Strider alone, and that's like him and a big drop off. All due respect to Justin Steele, he and Spencer Strider are not on the same level. It's not close, in my opinion. And you look at Max Fried and these guys. But anyway, I think they look at that and say, hey, we can get there. We're not getting there in 1 year. We're not getting to the Dodgers, we're not getting to the Braves. We have to build this. We have to bring some guys up. And then in 2 years, in 3 years, if things all go well, we can be more on that par. And in the meantime, we're going to try to do enough to give ourselves a puncher's chance, see what we can do before it gets to that point. Because, again, at the end of the day, 16 was awesome. Even though they made it back to the NLCS, right, in 17, they were absolutely steamrolled by the Dodgers. They had no chance in that one. That window was unreasonably short and did not need to be. There's no reason to have another rebuild. I think that is the point, is that they're putting this together with the intent. I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong or whether it'll work, but the intent is that they will not need to rebuild again 10 years after they've gone for it.
Exactly. Yep. What excites you most about the Cubs this season?
I think, if I'm looking at like a really granular thing, it's Shota Imanaga and can he locate the fastball up in the zone? Because I love that pitch so much. And if he can figure out how to work up, the NPB strike zone is much lower than in Major League Baseball. They don't call the high strike. As a result, he throws low. He gets scooped for a lot of homers. We've seen it in both of his starts so far. How he's able to adjust, that excites the hell out of me. How they figure out. I'm very, very interested to see Michael Bush, Christopher Morel, the guys at the corners. How does that come together? Those things are exciting to me. And then just how Craig Counsell as a leader, I don't even want to say as a manager, because I'm not talking about the moves that he makes or anything. From a leadership perspective, Joe Maddon's shtick wore thin with me very quickly. David Ross, I thought he said nice things, but again, he kind of as a manager bothered me a little bit at times. And so I'm very excited for how Counsell kind of changes things culturally, and how we see that play out. So those are a few.
What pitcher does Imanaga remind you of as a comp?
Man, that's a good one. It's really hard for me to say because I don't know of anyone, partially because of him coming over. This is maybe cherry picking, but Justin Steele in a way, and I will say this just because neither of them have overpowering fastballs, but Steele has that kind of cut ride fastball that he'll operate a little bit, or he'll manipulate it differently. And Imanaga, that what's wild to me, like if you look at the statistics, he is a low release point, kind of a shorter guy, low release point, but his fastball actually ends up higher than most, than the MLB average. So release is lower, ends higher, which is wild to me, right? It's super cool to see. But that's what's interesting about Steele is he doesn't have this broad variety of pitches, but he gets by on it because he's deceptive. He does things kind of differently. And so again, I'm cherry picking a very close example, but I like that as far as a left-handed pitcher who kind of gets by on guile a little bit more, you know, and I don't want to go with Lester. It's a different kind of pitcher, right? Like that's kind of feel like, but if you're going to be a John Lester, like you gotta be around for a while first. So I'm going to go with a younger guy.
Makes sense. I know you just talked about a few players, but I guess like, is there like a specific player? I mean, I'm sure there is, but like what players or even or prospects for sure intrigue you, or like who are you most intrigued by besides Imanaga, of course?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously he's out there. Bush is one to me where, again, we haven't seen much from him. I mean, he just hit a home run here recently, you know, as we're recording this. But nobody really saw much of him with the Dodgers, right? Like there's a point at which, and I mean, he was very highly ranked in their system, so people knew of him, but not a super young guy, didn't get a lot of chances because he was blocked so badly there in LA. Already one of the Cubs' top five ranked prospects based on how all that comes together. But, you know, has had to move around quite a bit. They're putting him at first base. How does that work out? You know, does the power show up? We've seen very little of him. He kind of had a gimpy shoulder a little bit early in spring, and so we've seen very little of him. And there's some mystery around him there, right? That is something. And then how does Morel handle third base? Can he handle third base? Can he be an everyday player at one position in the field? I remain very skeptical there, but man, the bat plays. If he can be in there, if he can get 500-600 plate appearances, he's a 40 home run. I mean, the power for dude, it is crazy for dude of his size, but that is very intriguing to me is what they do with that. Got Matt Shaw coming up behind him. How does that work out? So there's a lot of angles. The corner infield spots are the ones at which right now for me, have just a number of different storylines that are going to play out over the next few months.
I guess like who's a guy that maybe the casual fan doesn't know a lot about, but has the potential to be a fan favorite maybe later this season, or even has the potential to be like a dude, like, you know, like the next, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few of these guys out there. Right. And I don't know if, Like Shaw is probably too, it's hard to say like a first round draft pick people don't know about, but I think outside of like, we see a ton of Pete Crow Armstrong, right? He's got the blue hair and he's running around. But Shaw is that guy. Like he is a dog. That's D-A-W-G dog, right? To be like super trite and super silly, but that like, there's a few guys when you watch them play, and again, PCA is very flashy with stuff. You like he's it's obvious when he's out there, you're seeing it. Shaw is just such a fun guy, like just this baseball grinder type dude, sort of a throwback feel, like a Craig Biggio or something like that is sort of where I look at him. So I like
that.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of see him because of that. Because again, I think you see him, that's cool. He doesn't do a whole, you know, he's not this, I mean, Kevin Alcantara. I mean, just a tremendous, actually, I'll go with another one though. I'm going, Mo Baller, Moises Ballesteros. I think that is a dude, big old dump truck rear end, right? Like odd looking kind of a guy. He's very, you would never, if you put a lineup together, visually, you would never pick him out as the guy, who's going to do it, but he is super hitterish. Tremendous plate approach, good power. I don't know if he sticks behind the plate at all. I know he's been DHing, but that's a dude who I think could really end up. And those guys are kind of fun, right? In that, you know, he's just kind of, he doesn't physically appear to be someone who should be this great athlete. But Mo Baller is a ton of fun, super, super exciting hitter for me. And I think once he comes up and maybe can make an impact, people are really going to embrace that dude.
What concerns you about this team?
The pitching. You know, like I said, I love Justin Steele. Has been a super genuine dude. Have enjoyed interacting with him. I talked about Imanaga, but beyond that, I mean, Kyle Hendricks has question marks. Jameson Taillon going to get a start on Saturday, but you know. How much do we trust that? Like, who's the fifth starter? Is it Jordan Wicks, right? Young guy. We like him a lot, but how well does that play out? Is it Drew Smiley? Ugh. Up in the air there. Javier Assad, up and down. Hayden Wesneski, lots of issues there. So you have a lot of these guys, and if they don't make the rotation, now they're in the bullpen, but in what roles? How does that work? Who's who? Is Jose Quas any good? The rotation and then just the bullpen in general. So the whole pitching staff, I think, there's a wide potential, maybe more so like the delta between, you know, good and bad, I think is broader for them and not there's nothing set. Like, there's no reason to really believe like, oh yes, they'll be very good or they'll be very bad. Like, they can be entirely mediocre. I don't even know. But that is concerning to me as they go in there, because I think that's what's going to determine what they do.
I liked the Hector Neris signing a lot, and he had a huge year last year, had a 1.71 ERA. I know relievers are kind of voodoo. They're kind of random. The Cubs have done well in the last couple of years or so where they would, you know, get this low, you know, a guy that maybe people didn't expect much from, and then they seem to do really well. And he's only on a one-year deal, right? So I'm excited to see what he can do, hopefully in that bullpen in later innings. But hopefully he can replicate what he did most of last year or all of last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. It was kind of surprising. I did expect, you know, we talked about them spending a ton of money. Even if we didn't expect them to spend hundreds of millions, I really thought they'd go after some of those multi-year relievers, right? Get a couple guys at Jed Hoyer. And Hoyer talked about that, like buying certainty, quote-unquote, instead of kind of what we've seen is a lot of these non-roster guys, minor league deals, you know, finding a dude who's been hurt for the last 2 years and is trying to make a comeback, something like that. And that's what they have tended to do. So Neris is sort of that in between, right? It's a short deal for a guy who has been around a while, knows how to, you know, he's played for some winning organizations, has pitched in very big moments. So I do like that when you pair him up with Julian Merriweather, Adber Alzolay, that you've got the back end, the back three innings kind of taken care of. So I think that's a super, super good deal. Again, one of them that kind of waited out the market a little while, kind of made some moves late. And I think that could, and you know, I mentioned Quas, some other dudes, like, you know, there's a potential. Again, that bullpen could look really, really good. And I think Neris kind of sits right in the middle of that. To me, he's one of them that provides a little solidarity, you know, when the rest of it could kind of maybe skew a little bit one way or the other. And he's one of those dudes who you pretty much figure what you're going to get. He knows what he's doing. Tremendous deal, in my opinion. And I think that's something that could work out very, very well for them.
So last year I asked you about your grade for Jed Hoyer, and I know incomplete was basically the consensus that we both had on that, because obviously there's way, especially last year, there's a ton to play out. I guess like now, I think incomplete's probably still pretty much an answer there, but really, what have you learned over the last year about Jed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even more so that like he's done his prep. Right. Like he is he does his prep because it's still ongoing. And I think he is someone who's very, very convicted when it comes to who I'm going to sign for what. Right. Like this is the number. And I do think they stretched a little bit for Dansby Swanson. But at that point, like I think if we look back on it certainly the value relative to his peers in that class at shortstop. Looks really, really good. So again, and there's that word again, value. Hoyer is like, he prioritizes value. And he said this, we're about making good deals, not just making deals, or getting good deals, not just making deals. And that has been very clear. And the difficult part of it, when you do that, is that those things really only show up in hindsight as far as like, were they really good? Because it's hard to, you know, you get $80 million for Bellinger. You can't really call it bad because, relatively speaking, that's way cheaper than anyone would have expected. But you can't really know if it's good until a few years later, because if he does, let's say he just balls out this year, gets a new contract for $200 million next year and goes on to win two more MVPs. Now you're looking at saying, well, yeah, Jed, you gave him $30 million bucks for 1 year, and then look what he did for someone else for way more money elsewhere. So, yeah, I'm still in that, like, wait and see. But I do think we know who this dude is as an executive, right? Like, he's not stretching beyond what he says he wants. His comfort level is very, very firm. And he's going to stay right in his box that he has defined initially. And you know what? If your asking price falls outside of that, well, you know, fare thee well. And hopefully we, you know, we can meet somewhere down the road. But yeah, so it's how that works out will play out here. I think over the next few years, we'll know for sure.
Where do you think Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, and I think JD Martinez is still out there, right? Where do you think they'll go?
Oh, man, I have, like, that is the wildest thing to me, because we've really, yeah. It's back to the Bellinger. We've heard so little about, I mean, the Cubs have been connected a little bit. I mean, I've heard him in connection with Montgomery for months. I mean, going back to the beginning of the preseason or the offseason. You know, Snell is really all we've ever heard is the Yankee, even though Mike Tirico on Monday Night Football was like, oh, he's going to sign with his hometown Mariners. You know, I was like, well, that,
I remember that. Yeah.
Are you reporting something, Mike? Clearly not, because that didn't work, or hasn't yet anyway. Yeah. But, yeah, that seems weird. I heard, you know, the Marlins with Martinez, but they've got a couple guys down there. I have honestly no clue on any of them. But I don't feel like, as much as the Cubs have continued to be kind of mentioned around Montgomery, that just doesn't, at this point with where they're set up. Now, I don't know. Maybe that's different. I know Caleb Killian's got the injuries going on the 60-day IL. That'll open up a roster spot. Maybe that changes things. But Montgomery, I feel like, has said he's been pretty steadfast saying I don't want one of these pillow type deals. I want a more long term type of situation. The Cubs aren't jumping on any of these guys unless the value comes down again, to be redundant, right? But unless there's some crazy deal to come about that's like, yeah, they're willing to take $10 million for a year with these crazy options, I just don't see it being them. But, I mean, no. The market has not evolved on any of them at all. So I'm shocked because, man, both of those guys figured to make a lot of money. And maybe they still will. Maybe an injury brings it about, but no idea whatsoever.
Would you say, like, you know, it's probably unlikely, but, you know, because of the potential connection and the fit, maybe like 30% chance that Montgomery ends up in Chicago somehow?
Yeah, I mean, I think the possibilities are, again, and like I said, with Killian going down and opening up a roster spot, I think that changes things, right? Because you don't have to lose somebody out of your organization in order to sign them, and I think that is worth something. Right. The issue, though, and it depends. I do believe the Cubs are willing and they're either right at or maybe slightly over, depending on how the math ends up working out, that first luxury tax tier. And so to sign a guy like that, but I think the deal would have to be, I don't believe the Cubs want to go past the first tier. I don't think they want to go into the $257 million, you know, they're right at like $237 or whatever. And if Montgomery's not going to do less than a $20 million AAV deal, which it stands to reason that he can earn more than that, I don't think that they're in a position right now where that makes as much sense for them, unless it was, you know, a deal that worked out another trade or what have you. So, yeah, I mean, the possibility is there, and I think they're among probably the favorites at this point, but I think somebody ends up with a greater need and is willing to give him closer to what he wants than what the Cubs will.
Last impromptu question, but you mentioned Caleb Killian. Do you still feel like he has a bright, opportunity in Chicago, or is it kind of, you know, slipping here? And even Brendan Davis is a guy who we've been hearing about forever. He had the concussion or whatever recently. I mean, he seems like a guy that just can't catch a break either.
Yeah, it's really tough because I liked – and I'm a huge Chris Bryant fan, right? So, like, nothing like Alexander Canario and Caleb Killian would have to do tremendous things for me to be like, yeah, that was a great deal. I'm super happy about it. And I get it. And both have flashed well. But, boy, it was rough because the whole thing with Killian was like, this is a guy who had, like, this immaculate command and, like, didn't walk anybody in the Dodgers or the Giants organization and looked great when he came over to the Cubs. But then it felt like he sold out for a velo. And as a result, really had a hard time commanding any of his stuff from there. then he had, like, he's got a nagging knee injury. He's got this shoulder thing. He's had just a ton of issues. And that, man, it stinks because it felt like a lot of that came out of his debut. And ever since he debuted in the majors, he just has not been able to throw strikes consistently anymore. I have a lot of concerns for that dude when it comes to whether or not he can put it together. But I sincerely hope that he's able to. And I don't want to question anyone, you know, from a, this is a very, very psychological game. It's very difficult at times. So I don't want to question anybody's ability in that regard. I think physically he's been able to do everything. I do think that there are some things maybe psychologically that, and that goes back and forth. These all tie together, right? But he's in there, and you mentioned Brennan Davis. They're both in that same category now for me, to where it's like, I would love for nothing more than to see, I don't even care if it's with the Cubs. I don't care who it's with. Some other organization. I would love for both of them to succeed. Good dudes, tons of talent. But at this point, they've both moved into that, like, I'm not counting on anything from either of them, and anything that does happen in the future is gravy. And that would be awesome if it does, and good for them.
That hat, what hat is that?
Yeah, so it's my son's travel organization, so okay. MSP, Major Sports Performance. So this is baseball, his club baseball team. So I gotta rep that. It's just super, super happy with the situation over there. And we were over there this evening through a side session and did a little hitting work. So gotta rep the squad there.
That is cool. And I think I asked you this last year. I can't remember, so I'm going to ask you again. But have you ever been to Cooperstown?
I have not. My wife has. I have not. So she went, I think, in her teens at some point. So definitely something I would love to. And I wanted to go. You know, I missed Pat Hughes. I missed some other dudes. Mm-hmm. I missed Ryan Sandberg.
Yeah.
Ryan Sandberg got inducted the day after my wife and I got married. So that was not in the cards at the time.
Yeah.
But no, it's on the list.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm going to go back next month, late April. So I'm looking forward to that. My dad's not been there yet either. So I'm going with my parents. Nice. But I went solo trip to there. I probably told you this. I solo trip there 2021 already, almost 3 years ago, or 3 years ago already, which is crazy. But I went to the induction in 21, so that was cool. But yeah, it's a cool place, but looking forward to going back there. But you got your trip coming up here, what, end of March? So that's really cool too. Opening day, and you know, Texas, like you said, World Series opening up is the with the ring ceremony, the banner and everything. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, super looking forward to it. Like I said, just taking my son down there, getting the chance to see a few things, and like I mentioned, and there's weird little thing, like the bat that he has, and his batting gloves, and some of these things are from Warstick, which is actually, you know, was founded by or one of the big investors anyway is Ian Kinsler, you know, former Rangers great, and then Jack White of the White Stripes, who most Cubs fans will know of the time he was at Wrigley with his, you know, making a weird face and all that, but. Super cool stuff being able to go down there and kind of walk around in Dallas and hang out. And so, yeah, I'm just, like I said, that's the fun thing for me at this point. And that's why Cooperstown would be so cool, is making these trips. Like I love like these little baseball pilgrimages for one reason or another. Still need to get out to KC and see like the Negro Leagues Museum. That's one thing that I would love to go get the chance to see. Right. And to do that. So that's kind of, my jam is like going to new ballparks and doing the things around them. So, yeah, super, super excited about that. So got a few weeks left on it, but it should be fun.
Yeah, that will be fun. And yeah, it's almost here. It's already March, mid-March, end of season or end of spring training, I should say, will be here before you know it. And then, like you said, opening day will be here, which is always fun. So Evan, awesome chatting with you again. Glad we could do it. And, hope the Cubs, hope we have a lot of fun, positive things to talk about this team this year.
Absolutely. I hope so too. It's always the best when you're running a website or a podcast or anything like that kind of revolves around what this team or the teams in general that you cover. It's always much better when they're fun to follow. Otherwise, it gets ugly quick.
Zero.